My pen stopped working again.
I'm sure the doctor's got one.
Well, he's got an EpiPen.
Well, that'll work. You write a prescription with an EpiPen, sure. Can't you?
In the studio with us right now is Dr. Mark Kenton. He's an ER doctor out of Mercy. It's good to see you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks
welcome
for having
back.
Me back.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the big thing with the EpiPen is they brought down the price on them now. Is that right?
A generic version came out, cut the price in half, and then another competitor came out with a different version called Adrenaclick, which CVS now carries, which is much cheaper than EpiPen as well.
And the thing I've discovered from reading about all this stuff is the medication is cheap.
Very cheap.
It's the delivery system that's expensive.
But even that, if you look at the whole cost of the system itself with the medication, it's about $15 to make.
Really?
Yeah.
But people were being charged $500-$600 for this.
$600 or more for two pens. Yeah, so cutting it into half is still $300. Adrenaclick is about $110 for two pens.
In a situation like a school, for example, I mean, how many EpiPens do they require to have on premises?
Some schools require two.
Just two. So if you got, say, for instance, you're one of the larger schools in the area, you got 1,000 students,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you've got more than two kids who are having an issue, you're stuck.
Correct.
No, no pun intended.
Well, yeah. Right, but that does put the school at a great risk.
It could, absolutely, yeah. But the parents have to provide those EpiPens for the school, and that, so not only do they have to have two for school, but then you're going to have two or maybe four at home. We have at least eight of them at home for my son.
So I'm sorry. Wait a minute. You're saying that the student provides two for the school for themselves?
Correct.
There is no law right now that says a school has to have a minimum. I know they just basically passed the AED law where the schools have to have those, but there's no law that states they have to have EpiPens.
As far as I know, no. From that standpoint. Now, whether or not things are changing, there's a new, Senator Lester has been very active with proposing a new bill. I'm not sure if things will change from that standpoint. But.
And if you're a child who requires an EpiPen if you have an emergency, the EpiPen is in the nurse's office?
Nurse's office, depending upon the comfort level, some of the teachers will have them as well. But then obviously they need to be comfortable with that and training of that. And then the different versions. So for example, the Adrenaclick, which is new, is a little bit different from a standpoint of EpiPen. EpiPen, you hold, you open it up, you hold it on the leg for 3 seconds. Adrenaclick is 10 seconds. So depending upon, that has to be trained to the nursing staff at a school, et cetera.
How old, you say your child has it?
Correct. He's three.
Three. Okay. So three is still very young. But like, and how, what's the youngest age you think that a child is able to self-administer?
To self-administer? I have a six-year-old. I suppose he probably could do it if he had to.
But they would never let the student just carry the pen with him.
Usually not, no. No.
That's weird. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you're hoping that either the teacher in that classroom at that time is trained or the nurse is accessible.
Correct, right, yeah.
And the new pens are just as effective as the EpiPen?
The same medication.
Same medication.
It's just a little different delivery system.
More cost effective?
I think it's more cost effective, but the difference is having to hold it on the leg a little bit longer. The needle stays out, doesn't retract compared to an EpiPen where there's a safety protector on it. So it's a little bit of a different system that takes a little different training to it.
This is a medication that is given only when the problem comes up. This is not a preventative medicine. This is a reaction.
Like someone stung by a bee or eats peanut butter, has an anaphylactic reaction, is going into shock, their airway's closing. Mm.
So there's no way to put this in a pill or even to take it like insulin where you have it in a syringe and just take it yourself, right?
Well, it's a form of syringe, really.
There is a form, and actually what's happened is because of the cost of EpiPens, a lot of EMS companies have gone back to the syringe version where they have to break open the vial, draw up the medication, and then inject it, which obviously is a time factor as well. But that's where part of Senator Lester's bill hopefully will help with a lot of these EMS companies.
Does it have a shelf life on it that you can't just leave it in a syringe and then use it when it's...
Well, the EpiPens, they say, are only good for a year, so I would assume probably the same scenario.
This is Dr. Mark Kenton in the studio. He recently wrote a letter to Senator Lester about any number of things, but more importantly about the protection of people, especially in emergency rooms, doctors, nurses, other medical professionals. At times, you're not just trying to save lives. You're also sometimes trying to protect yourself from someone who may be agitated or high or, you know, whatever it may be. Tell us about the letter and what you're hoping to look to get here.
Well, I work part-time at Harrington Hospital as well. My wife is full-time there, and last week the triage nurse was brutally assaulted, stabbed, nearly died. She has 4 months away from retirement. She has a really very long recovery ahead of her. It was traumatizing to the staff. It was traumatizing to everybody that was involved with that place. And kind of makes you look at, from a safety standpoint, what are we doing? And, you know, what could be, how could we protect ourselves better? And starting to look at the legal aspect of this as well, and the fact that, for example, an assault on a healthcare provider is considered a misdemeanor, you know, in this state. And there's 33 states that have it listed as a felony. And there have been different bills that have been proposed to try to get this changed, and they seem to keep getting stalled.
This guy hasn't been charged with attempted murder?
Well, that's different because it's different. This had an assault with a deadly weapon.
Right.
For example, if I was at work and got punched, and actually one physician wrote to me, he got punched, he had a concussion, he had a fracture of his orbital floor, of his socket, and pretty much was said, this guy's going to be, he apologized, he's got no criminal record, he's going to get off within a year, so you may want to drop this. And these are stories that have, even since I wrote this letter, that keep coming out. I've been kicked, punched, spit on, sworn at, you know, I can't tell you how many times. And you know, and we kind of just, for a long time, have said, it's part of the job, it's one of the things that we do, it's one of the risks that we have. But after what happened last week to Elise Wilson, how can we start to minimize these things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly the change of this being a felony may not prevent it from happening.
May not, but, correct.
But it would certainly, you know, help in prosecuting and getting some justice out of it, too.
Correct. And I think it's a combination. I'm hoping to work with Senator Lesser with some bills that are out there right now to look at this from a standpoint of felony. But then also, what can we do from a standpoint of protecting everyone, paramedics and nurses and providers and, you know, what kind of safety measures can we take from a standpoint? And the reality is, do you have to wand everybody that comes to an emergency department now? We find weapons all the time. Do you have to think about metal detectors? And that's a push by the medical director of Harrington right now. You know, for a long time, there's been talk about metal detectors in emergency departments, but the thought process behind it has been, well, then you're creating an environment that's not welcoming, you know, versus one other hospital that might be more welcoming so they don't have it. Well, if this becomes a standard across the state, then you don't have to worry about that aspect of it.
So basically what you're looking for is the same kind of law that was recently changed for a police officer, because previously and very recently, the assault on a police officer was a misdemeanor as well, and it was just turned into a felony. You're asking for the same for EMS.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I want to ask you something. There was an interesting story I was reading last week about this congressman that was shot on the baseball field last week in Virginia and suffered a severe... Well, he was shot in the hip, but the bullet did an awful lot of damage to his internal organs and his abdomen and things like that. And they were talking about how many surgeries he has ahead of him. And what they said was that they've determined that there was less than 20% chance of survival if they did one long marathon operation to take care of everything. And what they've determined now is there's more like a 70% chance of survival if they do surgeries in stages over a period of time. Has that been the way you've been doing it? Or?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not a trauma surgeon, but from the standpoint of, you know, trauma, your goal initially up front, for example, if we have a shooting victim or a stabbing victim in the emergency department at Mercy, is really stabilized very quickly, transfer them to base state, and then at that point go in, they take care of that acute problem that exists. So if there's major bleeding, for example, with what happened to Elise, you know, they really try to control that bleeding, you know, process acutely, and then start to look at the secondary things that they may, what do they need to do from an orthopedic standpoint down the road? You know, because the orthopedic standpoint may not, that patient may not die from the fractures that might be there, but they're going to die if they don't correct the bleeding first.
They said in the article that, the first thing they'll do is to stop the bleeding, and then also if an intestine is damaged,
correct,
they got to, you know, make sure there's no sepsis afterwards. And then, you know, later they'll come back and do it. But it talked about also leaving the abdomen open. But it didn't say anything about whether or not the patient is, you know, for how long is the abdomen open, and is the patient conscious or kept sedated the entire time?
Many times they're kept sedated. Many times they're still kept intubated while I'm on a ventilator. It depends upon, you know, the time frame. Do they think they're going to go back the next day? Are they looking at this as being, you know, a week out? How many times do they need to go back from an infectious standpoint? They're going to need to go back. And
it could be a week, though.
Sure.
Yeah. I would be worried about, like, Junior Mints being dropped.
Well, they're quite refreshing.
They are very refreshing.
We can ask Seinfeld about that in July when it comes.
Exactly.
Doctors all over the country are still laughing at that one.
Yeah. But it is kind of amazing. That's what I've always wondered also. Why is it that anybody who goes into the hospital, particularly with, well, burns I can understand because, you know, the individual needs to be a part of the process of recovery. But for somebody else who goes in the hospital, like something really painful, why can't you just leave them unconscious until they're ready to go home?
Well, you know, from a standpoint of if we were to sedate people for a procedure,
yeah.
You know, sedation has its own risks as well because there's potentially airway compromise that could come with that. So everything we do in healthcare has a risk and benefit to it. It's a matter of kind of looking at, do the risks outweigh the benefits of some things we do, or is it the opposite way? So it's kind of, you know, what do you have to do to stabilize someone versus, you know, at some point you have to wake people up to get them home and get them up and walking.
What I mean. And I've had a few surgeries myself where they want you up and walking almost immediately afterwards, but I'd rather just sleep it off.
You know, you have to think about infections that can come and, you know, pneumonia and things of that nature as well. So.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Mark Kenton from Mercy, you know, interesting stuff. I hope you get what you want from Eric Lesser.
Thank you, and thank you for your support, too. You guys really took the EpiPen issue to another level, and we have a big press conference at Mercy for some new a bill that was presented by Senator Lesser on Monday. The press conference is there, which will hopefully...
Will you be thanking us by name or...
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. That's great.
I would prefer we get our name put on the EpiPen.
Or at least a wing. Yeah, we would have...
A wing. Okay, the Baxton O'Brien EpiPen.
All right, we'll get a... work on that. The snack machine will be named after us.
That sounds good.
Very good.
Out in the waiting room.
Doctor, we appreciate you coming
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Baxton O'Brien, Rock 102.